So I thought a good way to begin this weekend is just to do an overview, little refresher. Because there's some very wonderful points, very outstandingly inspirational points that when hearing them once again, I think it'll help prepare us for what's coming up, coming attractions. The Padma Purana speaks of these first two cantos as the lotus feet of the literary incarnation, or the literary form of the Lord. Prabhupada describes that in this age of Kali, Krishna appears in his nama rupa, but it's not, and this is indeed chanting of the holy name is our principal sacrifice for this age, yuga dharma, nama sankirtan. Just hearing Prabhupada explain this in Tehran, but this is not the only form of the Lord in which he appears in this world. It's the principal form, the form of the Lord that all other manifestations or forms of the Lord should be accompanied with. And then Prabhupada went on to explain the archa vigraha and how that is equally the form of the Lord. But how is one going to appreciate that form of the Lord apart from nama rupa? One will not properly appreciate the archa vigraha form of the Lord. One will certainly get benefit from the archa vigraha form of the Lord, but the chanting of the holy name will allow one to get that understanding. And the chanting of the holy name in the Bhagavat Marg is accompanied by hearing further descriptions of the Lord in his Bhagavat Purana. Just like in yesterday evening's Bhakti Friksha group, there was reading from the introduction of Bhagavad Gita, and Prabhupada was explaining that Vyasadeva has compiled the Puranas to give the spiritual conception, since there are these different energies, the Lord, the living entity being marginal, there's the inferior and there's the superior energy, and the living entity is in the marginal position. So the Puranas, the Srimad Bhagavatam being chief amongst them, is spiritualizing the conceptions of life and giving us messages from the spiritual world into this realm of the spiritual world, which one isn't going to get except through this descending method. One can directly connect with the spiritual world through those messages. And so to understand Krishna, this Bhagavad Purana is presented. And to understand Krishna, we first approach his lotus feet, just as in the deity form of the Lord, also in the sound incarnation form of the Lord in his Srimad Bhagavatam. So just I'm invoking that thoughtfulness, mindfulness, that we're approaching the literary form of the Lord at his lotus feet, and that means, the implication of that, is in the mood of humble service. May that mood of humble service become inspired by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam second canto. Because when that mood of humble service is invoked, then the form of the Lord manifests progressively. And the relationship that we have with the Lord manifests progressively. So may that mood of humble service be invoked. We're going to be picking up in the fourth chapter of the second canto. And just a quick summary of the first three chapters and then a little bit more of the detail of the fourth chapter, you know, up to where we ended up last time. The first three chapters are, in summary, an answer to the two questions that were asked by Maharaj Parikshit at the end of Canto 1. Maharaj Parikshit met Shukadeva Goswami. He accepted him as his spiritual master and requested instruction in these two questions. What is the duty of a person in general, of persons in general, and specifically, what's the duty of someone in a situation like my situation, about to meet death? What is it that one should do? The second question, what subject matter should one hear, chant, and remember? And the first three chapters of Canto 2 are a response in sequence to that question, those two questions. And all three chapters emphasize detachment or renunciation of the worldly conception and of the world, that the pursuit of worldliness. And then combined with that are other processes. The first chapter 1 is forming a God conception, first thing that one needs to do. Understand that there is a Supreme, and conceiving of the Supreme in terms of the material energy, the cosmic manifestation, see God within nature. And he gives specific examples of how to do that. Then the second chapter, again, detachment in various ways, but forming an attachment for that personal conception of the Supreme by focusing one's attention upon the Lord in the heart. So the Paramatma feature is identified. And his form is described in the process of fixing consciousness upon that form. Then a third chapter, again, detachment. And rising to the stage of recognizing that there is a Supreme who is the controller and source of all things and is all things, to enter into a relationship of devotional service, loving service. Important is abandoning the other processes and exclusively focusing on devotional service. And so the answer, what should one do? Devotional service. And particularly hearing Krishna Katha. So that answers the second question. what is it that one should hear? One should hear the topics of the Supreme Lord exclusively. And in relation to the Supreme Lord, that's also Krishna Katha. So he's answered Maharaj Parikshit's questions, and the chapter 3 ends with Sutta saying to the sages, this is what he summarized as his answers, and then the sages said, wow, what happened next? And what did Maharaj Parikshit say then? And so chapter 4 opens. Maharaj Parikshit is appreciating the personality of the Shukadeva Goswami's wonderful response. His heart, it's not just he has an answer to his question, but his heart has been illumined. He's beyond any material conception, any material attraction. His mind has become focused on that purpose just by hearing. And now he wants to hear further the glories of the personality of Godhead. He wants to hear this Krishna Kathamritam. And so he asks Shukadeva Goswami to describe Krishna. And he particularly asks for Shukadeva Goswami to describe how the Supreme Lord makes the arrangements for material creation. And it's significant that he asks that first for a number of reasons, because one of them being that we're at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, and if one can't properly understand all this material, all the stuff that we see in all directions all around us, how is one going to understand what lies beyond? So he's asking to understand the relationship of this creation in which we find ourselves and which he's hoping to cross beyond. How to understand this in relation to Krishna. Now, Lord Brahma also wanted very much to understand that. Later on in this canto, in chapter 9, Lord Brahma, I'm making a parallel, that something over here is something over here. Shukadeva Goswami is being asked by Maharaj Parikshit the same question that Lord Vishnu is being asked by Lord Brahma. It resonates stereophonically. Very, very nicely. Because Brahma's service is to create. So he has to understand how does it work. But it's not just technology. He wants to understand the Lord's relationship with his energies. And there's a reason why he wants to understand that. He's explicit about it. He does not want to be caught in the doership mentality. He does not want to think, I did it. He wants to be in the consciousness that you did it and I'm the instrument for you to do it. So he doesn't just want to understand the technology, the push and the pull, the cause and the effect, how it happens. He wants to understand the relationship between the Lord and his energies. This is Sambandh again. But it's not only relevant for Lord Brahma, because he's got to be the creator, it happens to be relevant for every one of us, because we also do something all the time. And so that we don't fall into false ego, the false sense of doership, the false sense of I did it, look at me, which the conditioned tendency dictates to think like that, even of simple things, what to speak of wonderful things. Maharaj Parikshit also wants to understand. Now, he's at the other end. He's like on his way out. And Lord Brahma was just on his way in. Just beginning. Like the dawn of creation. Before there was even anything. He had to assemble it all. So we're somewhere in between. And it's important for us to understand the same thing so we don't fall into false ego and doership, and we get not just the technology of how it happens, but get the consciousness right of the Lord's relationship with his energies. Now, side note here, I mentioned this when I was visiting before and discussing this a little bit. The project, I was requested by some devotees to make a presentation on intelligent design, evolution, and the Vedic perspective. And one of the things that I appreciated was the intelligent design folks have a tough job because of the power base that evolutionists have. Because evolutionists just wave their hand and say, this isn't science and it's supposed to disappear. Intelligent design. And, you know, Americans like the underdog, and so you know, rah, rah, rah for the underdog. You know, those guys should be given some credit. They've done a lot of good work over there. And theists kind of want to go in the direction of the intelligent design folks because it sounds like, you know, they've got God in their on their team and the other people don't. But there's some evolutionists that have a God conception, and there's some intelligent design people that have an atheistic conception. And whatever the conception is, neither of them are adequate, because this essential message that Maharaj Parikshit is asking and the method by which he's asking it is absent in both programs. And just to keep it really simple, the concept of consciousness is missing. But there's, you know, that's just keeping it really simple. So to underscore, now we're in the beginning of chapter 4, to underscore the nature of the question that Maharaj Parikshit is asking, Shukadeva Goswami's response, before he even starts giving the answer, shows how important the consciousness of the inquiry and the consciousness of the supplier of the Bhagavatam's answer is, because otherwise the whole thing remains a mystery. Even if we got our, you know, the data straight, you know, the info technology straight, it still remains a mystery. It still remains a mystery in terms of our daily lives, how to live a life of devotion when you have your data straight, but it's still not clicking. I'm not connected to Krishna. I'm not feeling connected to Krishna. And I want that feeling of relationship with Krishna. So the nature of the question and answer gets at the heart of the message, which is not just information. Although information is there. It's a little bit like the question in the Bhakti Riksha gathering last night. One of the persons was saying their opinion that doesn't really matter where good understanding comes from, if good understanding comes from any source, it's good understanding. Kind of like, you know, Mahabhagavat can take gold from the filthy place, and it doesn't matter if Adolf Hitler says E equals MC squared, or Einstein says it, or Krishna says it, if it's true, if it's something good, it's good. And in the discussion, something good, even by just, you know, how creation happens, how the energies and the process of creation unfolds, even if you can have Sankhya, one can be an impersonalist Sankhya philosopher. And where does it all come from? It all comes from nothing, or it all comes from the homogeneous smoothie of Brahman. And there's no person. With lots of technology and very refined understanding, and then, you know, materialists can come along and take that understanding and, you know, do powerful things with it, like make bombs and you know, nanotechnology, and understand the subtleties of the pushes and pulls of material nature, that you have to have a high qualification to enter into the mystery of those subtleties, but still not be in God consciousness. And over on our side as devotees, we can get the technology down, but still not be eligible to go back to Godhead. And during our present life, be conscious of our relationship with Krishna, which is what we want. And to doing the various things that we do, not act in false ego. So this second canto, approaching the lotus feet of the Lord, is the literary form of preparing us to be able to take up our occupational duties and the things that we have natures that allow us to do them in Krishna consciousness, side by side with chanting of the holy name that cleanses the heart. This is that which guides our intelligence, how to practically live our lives in God-conscious way, in a humble mood of service at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, and all the things that we do, the little ones, the big ones, and the in-between ones, all day long, all life long, and stay fixed in Krishna consciousness. That's the question that Maharaj Pariksit, that's the import behind the question he's asking. The question is, how does the Lord's energies work? It's not a technology question. And so, Shukadeva Goswami, there's two sections of verses before he even starts giving the how. The first section of verses, there's eight prayers of obeisances. And in those eight prayers of obeisances, he starts with, guess what he starts with? He starts with humility. I don't have the qualification to answer your question, because independently, nobody has qualification to do anything. What to speak of, describe Krishna and Krishna's relationship with his energies. In fact, none of us are independent to do anything, and therefore I offer my obeisances unto the Supreme Lord, who is fully independent and can empower his dependent living entities to do things. And this thing that you're asking is so wonderful, it's so high. Without his mercy, it cannot be done. and therefore I offer my obeisances unto him. That was, then he goes, he drills down, as they say, he goes deeper into the subject. He says that the Supreme Lord is not just one who fulfills desires. He fulfills desires. And no desires become fulfilled unless he fulfills them. He's the fulfiller of desires. But that's a very shallow understanding of what he does. What he does, a deeper understanding of what he does, is he engages in reciprocations of love with all living entities. And then he explores the relationship of love that he has with his devotees. And it appears he who is impartial is partial to his devotees, because it appears he reciprocates in favorable ways with his devotees and unfavorable ways with the non-devotees. But this is because one is looking at the externals and not what the essence of that exchange is. The essence of that exchange is a loving exchange. And so it's impartial because he's simply reciprocating with the attitude with which he is approached. That's all. It, the essence of this person who you're asking me to describe about his energies, he's a loving person. A supremely loving person. So while I'm offering my obeisances to him, I want to be sure that you all understand who this person is that you're asking about. Then Jiva Goswami writes in his Bhakti Sandarbha commentary, what Shukadeva Goswami wants to do, in addition to offer his obeisances to Krishna, he wants to enthuse his audience to really listen with great faith, because they're devotees, they're being inspired by Krishna Katha, heard from Shukadeva Goswami. And so he describes his inconceivable potencies as a way of inspiring their faith in the Lord. Because it's through inconceivable potencies that he does the act of creation, what to speak of the beyond the material world activities that are also made up of inconceivable potencies. And if one cannot accept the inconceivable potencies in creation, how is one going to accept, what to speak of, understand the inconceivable potencies of the spiritual activities of the Lord, the 10th canto subjects, the lotus face of the Lord? This Lord, this Krishna, he's not just an order supplier, he's a supreme enjoyer. And he enjoys this exchange of loving relationships with his devotees. So he, Shukadeva, as the speaker, cannot speak the message that's wanted without Krishna's empowerment. And similarly, the audience cannot let it enter into their hearts unless the Supreme Lord empowers that to happen. So he invokes in his obeisances the Lord's empowerment for him to properly speak. He invokes that the audience becomes enthused by the Lord's empowering that to happen. And he invokes the proper receptivity in his listeners. So not just the information will pass, but the realization will come about. And then he prays that he properly represents things by the Lord's empowerment for him to do so. He then discusses in his obeisances the qualification or disqualification, if there is qualification or disqualification. And what the area he goes into is that great sages, learned rishis, the most qualified persons in the universe, many of whom had come in the assembly, so he's addressing them as well, but addressing us as well, that without devotional service, those qualifications don't entitle one to receive the real fruit that Krishna wants to give. So those, using Prabhupada's language, high-grade activities produce high-grade results, or they bear the fruits of piety. But the fruits of piety is not the real gift, the gift giver Krishna, the fulfiller of desires Krishna. The real gift that he wants to give, the real gift he wants to give is his himself. And a loving relationship with him is through the medium of devotional service. So without, it's a glorification of devotional service. This is why it appears in the Bhakti Sandarbha of Jiva Goswami. Without devotional service, the simple message is, without devotional service, other good things bear no transcendental fruit, like the discussion last night. The discussion last night was, if Krishna gives a good message, included in that good message is the good message, but it's also Krishna. He's giving himself when he gives his good message. And if in a mythological Aesop's fables or Grimm's fairy tales or something else, some kind of good moral instruction, this is a good principle to live by, something like that, then it's good, but it doesn't give Krishna. And when Krishna gives good instruction, he gives good instruction and gives himself. You have a connection to the spiritual world, or in these three categories of Prakriti, there's this, or energy of the Lord, Vishnu Shakti, there's the spiritual energy, there's the material energy, and there's the marginal energy. You can get the good side of the material energy through good instruction, but you don't get the spiritual energy. When you get it from Krishna, you get the spiritual energy, which means you get Krishna along with the good instruction. But it's pure goodness, it's not mixed goodness. And so what Shukadeva Goswami is saying in this chapter is, oh great sages, great yogis and mystics, oh learned persons, oh ascetics and tapasvis, without devotional service, no transcendental fruit is going to come. The glory of devotional service is what's emerging as he's paying obeisances in these eight prayers to the Supreme Lord. On the other hand, step two is that when one engages in devotional service, automatically part of the package is the fruits of all high-grade activities. And what about someone, the third point is, what about someone who doesn't have pious activities? Are they ineligible for devotional service? Absolutely not. Then this well-known verse, Kirata Hunandra Kovinda Polkasha, etc. All classes of persons become eligible for perfection. Like the greatest gift that Krishna comes to give, which is himself, by his inconceivable potencies. Prabhavishnave Namaha. Prabhavishnave. by the all-powerful potencies of the Supreme Lord Vishnu. When you get him, you get all of his potencies. Or when you get his spiritual potencies, you get him. And through this Krishna Katamritam, you get Krishna. So you've not only asked how does he, you know, what's the technology? You want him. And if one listens with that consciousness, you get him. And as the speaker, if you speak with the consciousness that the relationship with Krishna is of the essence, then you get the capacity to speak, not just deliver information. You get the capacity to be the deliverer of Krishna, not just information. The essence is that loving relationship with Krishna, not the essences, the opulences that Krishna bestows upon his devotees. So, and he hasn't even started answering the question yet. Then there's a whole other section, and that's where we're reading from during this visit. This next section is, having offered obeisances, he now offers prayers for mercy. Humility, glorification, obeisances and submission, and now prayers. So I kind of introduced the first of those prayers. Let the words that I speak be empowered by you, since I'm not independent, to speak on this subject. I can't speak on this subject without your mercy. If you so desire, empower my words to inspire the hearts of this audience, Maharaj Parikshit, all the sages, and all the persons who will hear the conversation later, so that their hearts awaken to Krishna, and empower them as an audience to hear, and let the message be a transparent representation of the message I heard from Vyas. Then he, as you can recall, he speaks about the way of devotional service is to be taken up without pretension. Gata vyalikai was the phrase. And Prabhupada puts neon lights around gata vyalikai and speaks about it without pretension, which resonates with the very first verses of the whole first canto, where Vyasa says, the subject of Srimad Bhagavatam is only about Paradharma. It's only about Paradharma. It's not about Kaitava Dharma. If you're, hear ye, oh, my audience, if you're interested in material advancement, don't read any further. Because we're not going to speak about that. Don't read another word. Don't waste your time. Because this is only about Paradharma. It's how to connect with Parashakti, which connects one with Krishna. So, this gata vyalikai is above pretension, and the above pretentious devotee is one who approaches Krishna through devotional service for the purpose of establishing or re-establishing a relationship with Krishna through the medium of devotional service, indicating that many persons take up devotional service with other motivations, and Krishna may very well reciprocate and fulfill the desires of those other motivations, and such persons are unfortunate because they get the fulfillment of the desires of those other things. But the full gift that Krishna wants to give is himself, and that relationship is not experienced if one takes up devotional service with pretension. So this is like high subject matter, but this is the second canto. And it's just the beginning part of Shukadeva Goswami's speaking, and so he wants to establish, because it's who he is, he wants to establish very clearly the platform that he's coming from and the platform that his audience should come to if they really want to get the gift that Shukadeva Goswami has to give in speaking about, you know, how does it work? How does this cosmic manifestation thing happen? This is the method for understanding, not empiric research and speculative philosophies that have been going on since time immemorial without reaching the proper conclusion. Maybe getting a little closer, saying there's intelligence behind the thing rather than, you know, a primordial soup. But the understanding essence can be approached only by this gatavyavikai consciousness, approaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the mood of service without any anticipation of other things. Now, go back. Are you ineligible if there's other things in the heart? No, there's not ineligibility, but one should... This is Lord Chaitanya's teachings, or Rupa Goswami's teachings coming from Lord Chaitanya, that one should understand what the goal is. Even if I have other stuff going on in my heart, I should know what the goal is. And the goal is not to fulfill those things in my heart by approaching Krishna, but to, by approaching Krishna, to become free from any other desire but my relationship with Krishna, and thereby the other things will disappear from my heart. And as those other things disappear from my heart, Krishna certainly knows what the things are that I need, and he'll take care. I don't need to approach Krishna for the fulfillment of those things. What I really need is a loving relationship with Krishna. I want that. I want to know who is Krishna, and the way of knowing who is Krishna, what to speak of, how he does the act of creation, which is part of what Krishna is what he does. I'm not going to understand that unless I have this gatavyavikai approach to devotional service. And similarly, I won't have the execution of my daily duties in the course of life. I won't have Krishna consciousness accompanying me if I have this, you know, wish list of stuff and approach Krishna just for that. Without the number. So we're getting an understanding in the early part of Shukadeva Goswami's teaching in Srimad Bhagavatam how to approach pure devotional service in a non-envious spirit and not see Krishna as our order supplier, but to see Krishna as the lovable, worshipable object of life, even in seemingly ordinary subject matters and the duties that go along with those seemingly ordinary subject matters. Very, very relevant and very essential. In the purports of this section, Prabhupada raises the question, how does one know Krishna? Because, you know, the statement is, the purpose of the Vedas is to know Krishna. How does one know Krishna? He writes, one can know Krishna by constant remembrance of him. In every second, and following in the footsteps of great authorities. Not only one can know Krishna, but in trance one can see Krishna. So, in the Bhakti Riksha class last night, there was a question raised that didn't get answered. Maybe you can share this with the Mataji that asked the question. How are you supposed to do this? Meaning, her comment was, in activities you can do things for Krishna, but with the mind, how can you be engaged in the irresponsible activities of life? You have to have your mind on those activities. And how can you be thinking of Krishna while you have your mind absorbed in the activities of life? So she didn't say it this way, but the mind is a binary processor, and it's either a one or a zero, and how can it be? If it's a one over here, it's got to be a zero over there. How can you have your mind fixed on Krishna and have your mind fixed on your occupational duty? I'm driving a car or typing at the computer or I'm whatever it is that I'm doing, and how is my mind going to be always on Krishna? I can see how I can do things physically, but the mind, what about this? She asked, didn't get there. The mystery, the answer to that question has a mystery, and the mystery is the mystery of devotional service. And the mystery is, it's from the heart, that when one is attached to Krishna, you think of Krishna. And then the things that you're doing, you do for Krishna. And that's how you always have the mind fixed on Krishna. If you think of the energies separate from Krishna, then you're in this binary space, in the material space. But the energy, even the inferior energy of Krishna, is Vishnu Shakti. It's Krishna's potencies. So through devotion from the heart, the feeling of one's intimate relation with Krishna is awake. And when that's awake, you're thinking of Krishna. And then you're doing different things for Krishna. And that's how the mind is always absorbed in Krishna, by that intimate relationship with Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita interactive, I use that for my preaching a lot. And if those of you that have seen it, at the very end, there's that little clip, a little cube comes twirling out of space, and it's Prabhupada's picture, and then they have him speaking, or the audio portion is, this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita can be understood by one who has an intimate relationship with Krishna. And not otherwise. Because otherwise it's over here. It's something that's good, because not having a right understand, not having an intimate relation with Krishna, not being in the internal potency of Krishna, it's something good that I can't understand. And so, whatever I do with it, however I process it, and speculate on it, and get some kind of an idea about it, but not the intimate relationship of Krishna purpose. When the intimate relationship with Krishna purpose, just like here in this fourth chapter, when the intimate relationship with Krishna purpose is connected from the hearer and the speaker, you got it. And then you can live your life according to that intimate relationship with Krishna. Always think of Krishna. And get the real gift that the Srimad Bhagavatam wants to give, that Krishna wants to give, that a relationship with Krishna is meant to do for us, to take us out of the material condition and circumstance into the spiritual circumstance, even in this lifetime and beyond. But it's mystery. It's the mystery of bhakti. And so in the section of verses that we're reading, Shukadeva Goswami is invoking that as the speaker for the audience, and he's giving the hint or the clue how knowing Krishna is going to be made possible if we take up this exercise of hearing and discussing properly. Krishna will be known. Not only known, Krishna will be seen. But we're far from that. But the process is there, that he's invoking faith, that the potencies of Krishna are such that is what is wanted. And that can happen. Just summary then. Shukadeva Goswami wants for his audience, Maharaj Parikshit, the assembled sages, and others that would hear and discuss this subject afterwards. He wants the full blessing of Krishna to manifest. And he's pointing the way how that can happen. He wants that to happen for himself. He wants it to happen for Maharaj Parikshit. The full blessing of he discusses, because Maharaj Parikshit is the grandson of the Pandavas, and Maharaj Parikshit is missing his grandparents, plus he's about to go himself. But the glory of his grandparents is specifically their relationship with Krishna. So Krishna is gone, as are his grandparents. But he's describing this mystery is such that just by the process of devotional service, one can see Krishna. One can be with Krishna. One can experience one's relationship with Krishna. One can see Krishna through devotional service, if it's done in this gata vyalikai consciousness, the unpretentious consciousness. And that's enthusing. It's mysterious. But if one can capture the message and enter into the mystery, then one can experience Krishna just from this in this mood of submission and service at the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, just by hearing. So Shukadeva Goswami is experiencing that. He's in ecstasy as he's speaking. Jiva Goswami comments, and he's sharing that ecstasy with his hearers, and of course with the beginning of the chapter, Maharaj Parikshit is fully entranced himself. So they're a good duet, hearer and speaker, in perfection. So that's what we've covered so far. Chapters 1 through middle part of chapter 4. Any discussion or comments? Chico?
Alright, so the question of how to move from the position of duty to the position of actually doing things with love is what you just answered. That is how to always remember Krishna initially in duty, working as a binding processor, and love actually with success. Higher position, where you're acting from the heart and sincerity in relationship with Krishna.
Making a comment, or you're asking a question?
I'm asking if the right hand, it is the right understanding that duty is that position of having that binding process that's going on.
Um, Is the position of duty essentially still on the material platform? That's your question. Not necessarily. It's a qualified answer. It might be, it might not be. Bhaktivinoda Thakur states that duty and love are not on the same platform. But Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, when properly performed under the guidance of Rupa Goswami or his followers, it leads into spontaneous love. And so it's like the seed or the little sprout or the little germinating plant in comparison. It's just a preliminary stage of the fully matured fruit of love of God. Even in the duty stage. Over here, the sense of duty is without that spiritual connection. It's my duty to respect elders. It's my duty to, whatever it is, to do some religious thing. Then it's not the same. Then it's the binary. Now there is, so over here in the realm of devotional service, there are discriminations that we make that are not spontaneous. I should rise early and perform Mangal Arati. I should chant my rounds and I should not commit offenses. But that's regulative devotion. Now, the regulative devotion may be in the beginning with desires. Not only maybe, it's most certainly going to have desires. But, the privilege, the special concession for those who are followers of Lord Chaitanya is if there's the spirit of accepting the goal as Shukadeva Goswami is laying it out here or as Lord Chaitanya taught and his followers taught, then the discrimination that one makes about eradication of desires, the anartha nivritti stage and so forth, sankalpa vikalpa, accepting, when you're accepting those things that lead you to devotional service and you're actively cultivating like that, that's uttam bhakti. So the eligibility for that uttam bhakti, even in this position where there's material desire, is this descending mercy of Lord Chaitanya and his associates. And embracing that special dispensation of mercy that he's offering, however one may be not so advanced to receive the fullness of it. I'm way down here, and that's way up there. I have desires. I have distractions. I have bad habits, and so forth. But I embrace that. I aspire for that. I'm praying for the mercy, just like Shukadeva Goswami. I'm praying for the mercy of the Supreme Lord and his loving associates that I may attain that. That's considered by Rupa Goswami as uttam bhakti. It's not at the matured stage yet, but it will come to that stage. And one who has faith in that principle, the process will nurture the faith. It'll come to that stage. Something else? Yeah, Donna Kelly?
About this point of understanding the technology of how Krishna's
how he does it.
Is it necessary for one to be interested in
tech? It's not necessary for one to be interested in the technology. It's necessary for one to be interested in the relationship that Krishna has with his energies. How marvelous is Krishna? How wonderful is my Lord? This lecture I was hearing, it wasn't a lecture, it was a room conversation in Tehran. A person asked, not exact question, but similar. Prabhupada was speaking, but everyone, all religions accept that God is great, but how great is God, that they may not know. And one who does know, then, in the real sense of knowing, then the faith and the fixed position is unbreakable. Then the man asked Prabhupada a question, what about faith? What about blind faith? And then Prabhupada went down the path, faith is not blind. Then he changed gears and said, even if there's blind faith, Krishna is God, I should serve him. You get the same result as, well, I'm not so sure I should serve Krishna. Who is Krishna? Well, he's the one that does this act of creation. Here's how he does it. Here's how marvelous it is. Oh, then I want to serve him. So whether it's simply on faith or it's supported by knowledge, because one inquires, as Maharaj Parikshit has inquired, then the result is the same. Then the Prabhupada went back and forth two or three times saying, faith or with full knowledge. Then he went down the direction of those who are spiritual masters, they must have this full knowledge. So that they can answer the relevant inquiries of those that may approach them. They're capable of nurturing the faith of others by that full knowledge. And then Prabhupada was saying, because there are very few persons that have that tendency, there are very few spiritual masters. So, is it necessary? No. The technology of it, but the essence of it, yes. Like that example, the cobbler, when Narada came back saying Lord Narayan was pulling an elephant through an eye of a needle. Oh, how wonderful is my Lord. Without knowing the technology, he has inconceivable potencies. And this banyan seed, he can make hundreds of huge banyan trees inside this little seed. Pulling off into the eye of the needle. He has inconceivable potencies. So the technology of how is not critical, but the understanding of the relationship of those potencies with the potent, and marveling and glorifying and adoring the Supreme for that. So in one sense, knowing the technology might be a disqualifier for that marveling, if there's a tendency in the heart for pride. Oh, now I know this, and then I know that, and I know so many things. And then with other contaminations, using that for some other purpose besides glorification of the Supreme Lord. Yes.
I was hoping to get some clarity. There was some paraphrasing here. Back to the middle of the lecture. There was statements to the effect that the audience becomes influenced by the Lord empowering that to happen.
Sukadeva was praying to the Lord to enthuse his audience, to become inspired.
Okay, and from the audience perspective, are they praying for the enthusiasm? Is that
enthusiasm? He was praying for the empowerment from his side, and he was also praying for their hearts to be open to receive that.
Okay. To further seek more clarity here, there was the other statement that if we listen with the consciousness that we want that gift, then we get the gift. If we want Krishna, we can get Krishna. Now, I just am trying to understand here, what's that want? Is that dualistic mentality?
No.
For that one?
For the sake of the recording, I'm going to repeat the question. Is that a bird? Oh. Okay. If we're praying to Krishna for receiving that gift which Krishna wants to give, namely himself and his a relationship with him. If I pray like that, is that also doership mentality? It's a relationship, and so it's not doership, it's a relationship. And the other part is the same as Shukadev as the speaker. He can't speak on this subject, saying the audience cannot receive that gift from either side without Krishna's mercy. So the prayer is for Krishna's mercy. And the object that one wants in such a prayer is for that relationship to flow. It's not doership. It's certainly a desire. And there's certainly something that one has to do. It's not my doing will make it happen. Like I have nice prayers and so it's going to happen. Because it'd be on the strength of my nice prayers. Yeah. Yes, Radhika?
On the topic of opening our hearts to receiving the gift that Krishna wants to give, when I'm feeling disconnected with Krishna, my heart totally closes to that gift, and it's almost like there's two intelligences. You know, one is the Krishna conscious choice, and I'm aware of it, the Krishna conscious way too comfortable, and the other is totally rebellious, and I consciously make the choice of the other side.
The total rebellious choice is a conscious choice. Yes, that's true. I mean, is that true just for you? It's true for it. Even we may not be at all moments aware of the conscious choice that we're making, but it is a conscious choice. To the conscious choice of this is the Krishna conscious thing to do. The relationship with Krishna is what I really want. I'm choosing. I am going to choose. I am moment to moment choosing that which will awaken my and be conducive for my relationship with Krishna. And to not do so is also a choice. And so?
Two questions. Why do I inevitably always choose the wrong side? And what can I do in such
a... Well, it's not that you always do, otherwise you wouldn't be where you are. But why do we make those choices at all? It's our rebellious spirit. It's the primordial boo-boo. Misuse of free will. One answer is, it doesn't make any sense. It's really dumb. Why would I do that which brings pain and suffering? Why would I do that which takes me away from the real happiness and joy that I know isn't like any other thing, why would I choose something other than that? It's really dumb. There's no rational explanation for it, so don't think that there is. Don't go searching for a rational explanation. It's very irrational. It's just rebellious spirit. And how to fix the problem? You know, it's all our regard for Krishna. It's our relationship with Krishna. It's the attitude that we have toward Krishna. And it's, you know, it's at the very seat of consciousness. So it's not like I fixed the problem by adjusting things out there. It's here. So in a mindful and devotional approach, consider your relationship with Krishna as the most important thing of life. And then from that one, then relationship with the spiritual master, relationship with intimate Vaishnavas, and you know the whole pyramid is built. But it's relationship with Krishna. And then you dismiss the relationship with Krishna, you dismiss all the rest. You know, go the other direction, try to put all the other things in place without Krishna. It's flat and like a house of cards, and something wiggles and the whole thing falls. This is you know, on the binary processor of the mind, a little default bug in the system, your whole, you know, the whole system crashes, and all the data's gone. All the relationships, all the feelings, all the meaning, it's gone. And you know, when your hard drive crashes, what do? You cry or something. You have to reconstruct the whole thing, and don't make the mistake of reconstructing, or try to avoid the mistake of reconstructing on the platform of the mind, but rather from the heart. The real, anyway, just keep trying. Get up and try again. When the house of cards blows over, there was something fundamental I missed here. Not just building a very intricate house of cards or a mental construct that says, I'm going to serve the devotees and be humble, and then, you know, some little thing, some wind comes along and the whole thing's gone. But then it's circumstantial, and it just, I accepted it in my mind, but I didn't accept it from my heart. That's the seat of consciousness, the soul. I want a relationship with Krishna. So in the beginning of devotional service, go back to what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. Four types of people take up service unto me. They want this, they want that, they want that, they want that. And after some time passes and they get this or that or the combination of things, what's the motivation? See you later, Krishna. Until I need something again, then I'll come back. But then it's to continue in devotional service, one has to change the purpose of I want to these things to I want Krishna. I want Krishna. And then there's this stop-start. On, off. Go forward, go back. That's the mind. till it's from the heart. I want my relationship with Krishna. And I want relief from this mental construct of what devotional service is. I want the real thing. Devotion to Krishna. Through the mercy of those that have it and can give it to me or can reawaken that within my heart. Shukadev Goswami is praying to Krishna to empower him to do that for his audience. And the audience needs to pray for that to happen. Knowing that, you know, this residual effect is still going on. But it will subside in the course of time. When one is sincere for that, so what's the eligibility of the candidate for devotional service? Nectar of devotion? One sincerely wants it. And in more mature stage of sincerely wanting, it's greed. I've got to get it. Excessive greed. Lolium. Which in material side is bad. Being greedy, bad. But in spiritual arena, it's good. It's more than good. It connects you with the spiritual energy. It connects you with Krishna. And it, for lazy people, where complacency won't get you there. Then it's, you know, complacency says only when it hurts, only when the pinch is on, am I going to go to Krishna with some sincerity. And that some people stay there. And the appeal of Shukadeva Goswami is go beyond that. He wants to be empowered to go beyond that, to take his audience beyond that. And the audience needs to understand that's what Shukadeva Goswami wants for us. And he wants it for us because that's what Krishna wants. So Krishna wants our loving relationship more than we want Krishna's loving relationship. But he doesn't mess around. He doesn't interfere. So we have to, that's the what to do. And how does it happen? Because Prabhupada is asking the question in the purport. I read it. By constant members of Krishna following the great authorities. One can not only have that consciousness, one can see Krishna continuously. Oh, Maharaj Parikshit, you're feeling the separation of your grandparents who are always seeing Krishna. You can always see Krishna too. Just take up, as I'm about to speak, take it up in that spirit, that this devotional service, this message of Srimad Bhagavatam, this description can bring us to that position. If we take it up in the right way. A shorter answer is that the anishtita bhakti becomes nishta by the process of devotional service itself. One who has faith will continue with the process of devotional service, faithful that Krishna will lift me and I will make my endeavors to become freed from these anartas, particularly the offenses against the chanting of the holy name. Something else? Yes?
I was asking for some clarification. You mentioned that the Bhagavatam in the beginning says If you're approaching Bhagavatam or anything else, stop right here.
Well, dharma projita kaitavotra paramo nirmat saranam satam. I was paraphrasing.
And I was thinking about the life of Guru Maharaj. He had a completely different motivation.
He had completely different motivation, for sure.
But the only way, or seems like his attachment to Narada Muni is what made him go over that.
Yes.
Is that?
That's correct.
That was my...
Well, it's the association, yes, it's the association that Narada provided, and the message that Narada provided, and the mercy that Narada provided, and his attachment for that. So to the reader, if you're not interested in achieving what Dhruva achieved, because what Dhruva wanted was the personality of Godhead. Because the personality of Godhead could give him what he wanted. It brought him to the unpretentious stage. Association of Narada. I appreciate the nature of your question. But so the Bhagavatam, the pronouncement at the beginning, is if you're of that position where you don't want to get what Dhruva got, you want to get some other things. And in the Bhagavatam, in the second canto, it gives the list of other things. If you want, here's where you go. Here's which department and the person by name who to ask for. You can say, Shukadeva Goswami sent you. But the intelligent person will go only to the personality of Godhead. And then in that section, akama sarva kama va moksha kama udarati tivrena bhakti yogena. So if one is ready for this tivra bhakti message, read on. Because tivra bhakti is going to take you beyond your material desire. Okay.
I was just appreciating that Guru Maharaj did not have tivra bhakti desire.
Oh, he did too. He did too. That's what Narada saw, and therefore Narada gave him the means to come to Vishnu. I want Vishnu. Narada? It doesn't mention it in the Bhagavatam, but it mentions it in another Purana. My dear Narada, if you can't give me Vishnu, then please allow me to take your leave. He wanted Vishnu. It was Nick's devotion. He wanted Vishnu.
Okay.
Because on the simple faith that his mother said, if you want this kingdom, there's only one way to get it, Vishnu. And he trusted his mother. Okay, I'm going to go find Vishnu. Anything else?
All right.
Yes.
So I'm just trying to understand the importance of descending mercy, because most of the things that I so far was doing, performing, is not on a completely from the heart or consciously trying to perform devotional service. So in that case it's all ineligibility for me to even take up the process, unless it is
No, you can take up the process that we're in a condition where your heart is not immersed 100%, 24 hours to the max in undivided devotional service. You can take up the process. You are taking up the process. And by taking up the process, many things are happening. Like you know, recognizing that there are so many other desires that you didn't even recognize what existed before, and the flickering state of the mind and rebellious spirit and misconceptions and all kinds of embarrassing things that you didn't even, you know, not only you, any one of us didn't recognize they were going on. And the ability to overcome some of those things and the stronger determination to go further. So many things, so many fruits are there of the process of devotional service which you're taking up. So, keep going, champ. You can do it. Not in the false ego sense, but the process is very powerful and it's working. You're a recipient of the internal potency. The descending mercy is happening. And therefore acknowledge the encouragement is not only continue, but magnify the appreciation of the descending mercy that is coming. And that should give impetus, having received such a wonderful gift, to give back to that source where that descending mercy is coming from. And that's the loving relationship. Isn't it nice? And through that exchange, the fullness of the loving relationship with Krishna becomes revealed. Just keep following that thread. I'm more attached to Krishna or Prabhupada? Well, on a personal side I would say Prabhupada, but then Prabhupada would say, how can you be attached to Prabhupada without being attached to Krishna? Because how can you see them separate? And the understanding is the spiritual master, or Prabhupada, is the external manifestation of Krishna. And he's Prabhupada, but he's the external manifestation of Krishna. And if one has not just a sentimental attachment, but a properly guided attachment, then that's the attachment. Because a sentimental attachment would be intermittent. Sometimes on, sometimes off, sometimes on, sometimes off, sometimes on, sometimes off. For it to be an always on, that's some indication that a proper spiritual conception is there. I can't say that I have full realization of that, but some realization of that. Indicated by what Prabhupada did, how is it possible for a jiva to do that? What he did. And it wasn't even, you know, did he travel the world 12 times, or, you know, people can get in airplanes and travel around, and that he spoke the message of Krishna consciousness. So many people speak the message of Krishna consciousness, but see what came of that. Not only so many devotees, because, you know, there's some people that have a lot of devotees, but the degree of Krishna consciousness that was manifested, and it there wasn't an infrastructure to help them do it. It was his spiritual potency. He was divinely empowered, confirmed by scripture, but even common sense. So through attachment to Prabhupada comes attachment to Krishna. I could say that unquestionably. Whatever attachment I have for Krishna is through attachment to Prabhupada, with to the degree that there is some proper spiritual conception. Thank you very much. You're the fellow pod.